Pit 4-6. It's welcome to Cambridge with a bump for Gary Monk. But can United regroup and perform in a crucial six-pointer this Saturday? Hello and a very warm welcome to Under the Abbey Stand review and preview show. I'm Jordan Warland, and joining me tonight on the Dad Pod is the one and only Matt Caspel. Good evening.
Hello, mate. Is it a six-pointer? Could be like a nine-pointer. Reading might lose even more points somehow. I don't know how many points are actually at stake.
I was having this conversation with someone earlier in the week. Where would you compare it to last season? Would you compare it to an Accrington, or would you compare it to like an MK Dons?
Nah, it's an MK. It stinks of that MK game. It just feels like roughly the same. I mean, what's mad is that this time last season, we hadn't even started yet our climb out of the doldrums. It's funny how, I mean, it's a recency thing, right? It's funny how this season, for some reason, it feels worse now. Like, it's hard to remember how it felt a year ago, but it must have felt worse a year ago because we were in an appalling situation a year ago. But for somehow now, everyone's saying it feels worse now. You know what I mean?
I'm in that camp. I do feel like it's worse. And I tell you why I'm there. I think there's a couple of reasons, but one definitely has to be the fact that not that long ago, well, actually it's quite a long time now, but it doesn't feel like that long ago, where we were sitting in quite a good spot where you're kind of like, you know what, it's sort of in our hands, you know, win here or win there, and we're basically over the line. And then, yeah, I've lost count of the defeats since then, but what, six in the last seven or something like that soon sort of wipes that out. So that's why it feels bad, because there's kind of like that fall from sort of having it very much like a much sort of clearer path and more in your control. And yeah, that's the other reason it feels bad. Like, I don't know, I know a lot of people last year felt like we would stay up even when we was like second bottom, but I kind of sort of made my peace with it sort of going down. And so yeah, it did. Whereas, you know, I haven't done that this year. I'm still very much thinking, hang on, it's in our hands, and then it's changed. So yeah, I'm in that camp, man. I'm in that camp where it feels worse this year. And that's before you even add in things like the league is weaker this year. We've spent more money on the squad and all those other factors. So yeah, I'm firmly in that camp. I feel like this year is way more demoralizing, but it's not over. So we shouldn't be so defeatist, you know. Big win on Saturday, get on the pitch, get Reading deducted a few points, and we're laughing. And of course, Matt, it's not long until Sunday, the 31st of March. You know what happens then?
The clocks, baby.
The clocks are changing. Yes,
the clocks are changing.
How many games we got before then? We've obviously got Reading.
Well, we bumped. You know, we bumped off the.
Yeah, move the Wickham
game.
Move the Wickham one.
Because we knew the clocks were going to change. But what we didn't factor in is the fact that in our last 15 Tuesday night games, we have lost 12 and drawn 3. So I don't know, will the clock change be enough to overcome exactly how bad we are on Tuesday nights? I've got no idea. Plus, you throw in that it's Wickham as well. It's an interesting set of things going on, definitely.
It's fine. They'll be on the beach. They'll be on the beach.
That's and famously, we're great in that situation, aren't we? So
conceding 6 against Lincoln got me thinking about the times that I've seen us concede a lot of goals. I think it was Squeeze on Twitter that posted that this is a season where we've conceded 5 under 3 different managers, which is quite a feat. But I was thinking of the 6 figure specifically, and I was wondering if November 2001 was a little bit too early for you. I wanted to check in and see if you could remember. Tranmere away, we lost 6-1. Lionel Perez got sent off quite early for a handball.
Of course he did. Handball
outside the box. And thinking to the mailbag pod that you guys did quite recently and Sean Marshall, who I completely agree with, would definitely put him in the worst squad there. God love him. If I'm remembering it correctly, I'm pretty sure he came straight on. So obviously someone got hooked and he came on off the bench. And like the first thing that happened was the free kick from Perez handling the ball outside the box was absolutely smashed at him. And he sort of just palmed it up into the top corner, like a really tame attempt to save it. So yeah, that was my memories of the last time we conceded six specifically. I'm trying to think of some other ones. Got a lot of fives and some sevens.
So that Alfreton FA Trophy game, I think I reference it a lot on the pod, where it's 3-3 at full time and then they beat us 6-3 after extra time. That's six.
Wow.
Specifically six.
I'm thinking regular time, mate.
Oh, right.
But I'll allow it. Count. I'll allow it. Yeah, no, of course I'll allow it.
Trophy doesn't count. Six specifically. Obviously, Luton thumped us 7-0, which features six goals, famously.
That's it. That's it. And like MK, were they? Did they get any sixes or were they fives?
It was 6-0, wasn't it? Or was it 5-0? But they were 3-0 up after like 11 minutes or something.
I can think of a lot of fives and I can think of a lot of sevens, but yeah, there must be some more sixes in there as well. That's great, isn't it? It's also two MK references in the space of 2 minutes.
Too many, mate.
Matt, you went.
I did.
You're on Tuesday night to Lincoln. Have you recovered?
Have I recovered? So I got home at 1 a.m. because I live in Surrey as well. So it's not even like going on a Tuesday night is a remotely good idea. And then I got rattled out of bed about 6 a.m. by a 1-year-old. So I had fewer hours sleep than we conceded the night before. So have I recovered? It wasn't as wounding as your Peterborough away Derby Day defeat, I would say. It's a bit more of an air of resignation about it all and a sense that when you concede that early and then you concede a second also fairly early, that the game is probably gone. And also, to be fair, I think if you're being sort of philosophical, like everyone's been doing their fishy rest of season calculations and stuff, and I'm not sure anyone would have had us even getting a point at Lincoln with the form they're on.
Absolutely not.
We did lose to a far, far superior side. Like if you ignore just how poor we were for a minute, they were right on it. They were bang on it. Like I'd be shocked if they don't gate crash the playoffs. I think they're that team that comes from sort of mid-table and arrives into the playoffs at 100 miles an hour. If they can sustain that, then they'll have a good chance of getting promoted all the way through the playoffs, definitely. They're probably one of the best, actually, just strictly performance, probably the best team or performance that I've seen us come up against, even probably including that Peterborough game. So there was plenty to like shrug your shoulders about, I would say. But yeah, we were awful. So the worry is not really about Tuesday night. You write it off, I guess, mentally. The worry is what happens on Saturday and what's going to happen for these last 9 games, because every single game is getting much more important really, really quickly. So I think it probably does. It is similar to MK away. Might as well mention them again.
Which was six. I double checked it.
It was six.
New Year's Day. What was that? 2019, something like that. Yeah. 2019, 6-0.
Similar to MK, I mean, the MK last season in terms of the timing and the importance. Well, we went to that MK game last year saying like, this is like do or die, this is it. And bear in mind, we still stayed up. So it's like this Reading game on Saturday just feels like almost similar level of importance at stage of season, even though stats-wise, table-wise, we're in a much, much better position than we were then. It just feels really significant because we need to see some kind of major shift in everything. I think it's fair to say everything.
Oh, absolutely. But before we talk about sort of the things that we could change or should change and so on, I completely agree. I had nothing, no expectations other than a defeat on Tuesday night. They put five past Blackpool, who are much better than us, away as well.
Barnsley.
Oh, sorry, that's right. Yeah, Barnsley. Good point. Who even
that's
better?
All right.
They're even better than Blackpool.
Better than Blackpool.
sometimes you just hit a team when they're banging form and it's always going to be uphill. But having said that, despite all the things that we can say about their form and their just that run that they're on, despite all of that, got to make it hard for them, right? You can't concede the goals that we conceded. And Monk post game said Exactly that. He said, at any level, you can't give away the goals that we did. It was self-inflicted. I know you're slowly recovering from Tuesday night, but should we talk about some of those goals and just how self-inflicted they were? Maybe we don't talk about all six. Should we pick?
Have to jolt my memory and remember the sequence of what happened.
Should we
goals than I can recount.
Yeah, should we pick like one or two least favourites of the six?
Least favourites. Well, let's caveat that by saying that I left at 4-0. So you can immediately dismiss goals 5 and 6. I did hear them because I was in the, you know, that laddery residential area making my way back to the car.
The fifth one was a back hill.
I've seen the highlights.
Yeah, I mean, and they came from a corner. There was some poor marking. There was slow to react. Pretty much what you could say for all of them, really.
You may have just described all six goals. Yeah. I would say. I think one thing that unites all six goals from obviously the last two from highlights, but from perception on Tuesday night. Lincoln didn't do anything overly special to score any of the goals, it felt like. It just felt like preceding all of the goals, there were, it's probably not even fair to single out any individuals. It really felt like there was like catalogues of errors by individuals surrounding the goals, if that makes sense. It's not even worth digging people out individually, I don't think, but it's like lots of dilly-dallying on the ball. What I was left to wonder, to be fair, is whether it's actually, obviously the instructions from Monk wouldn't be like piss around on the ball on the edge of your own box, or just, I think it was clear from my perception they were told to look after the ball more, if that makes sense. So play short, don't smash the ball long, try and play football. And it just backfired in the most serious of ways. But to be honest, like if you're 3 minutes into a game, and you're in your own box and you've got that kind of ball and you have an opportunity to deal with it, you're just at that point, being Cambridge United and being away from home, you just got to deal with that. It's okay. Like I'm a fan of retaining the ball when we can, but I think first few minutes of the game, you need to nail your fundamentals. And it's like one of your first touches is just like, just get rid, you know what I mean? Just send it to another postcode is fine. Same with the second goal.
I was going to say, I agree. And I think my least favourite of the night was the second one.
I think the second one is bad because it's first Jordan Cousins who sort of gives the ball away. And then I think it's Liam Bennett who also gives the ball away, like running, cuts inside and then rolls it. Digby gives it away.
I was going to say, Liam Bennett passes to Digby.
That's it.
Just inside the penalty area when he could have hit it long. Digby then tries to pass it out to a pass that he was never going to make.
I think it's like Kachunga then also like somehow wins the ball and then also gives it. But it was just literally, it was like, right, well, half of your outfield players basically there have given the ball away or not made what you would say in that moment critically is like the right decision. And the thing is that there are a multitude of choices you can make. We weren't under a massive amount of pressure at that point. Like, you don't just have to lamp it up to their goalkeeper, which is not a great outcome. You know, hit a channel ball, like try and hit Lancaster on the wing. Do you know what I mean? Try and do so many other things that you might be able to do with a football that reduces the danger, doesn't carry too much risk. You know, you might give a throwaway in their half or on the halfway line rather than just launching it at Lyle Taylor, which is a low percentage option. So, yeah, I would agree with you, actually, the second one of if we're ranking the goals, which we definitely don't have time to do, or mental capacity, then the second one, I don't know, because the first one just cuts your legs out completely because you're going to the team with the second best defensive record in the division with our away record, and you've hit the third minute of the game and you've just given them a really easy opportunity to score. And it's that that's completely nailed us. Like, our game plan has kind of gone in the bin. Not that we changed anything, not that we evolved. So I think where you said, obviously, quote from Gary Monk post-game, it was self-inflicted. I think he also needs to look at himself because the setup was not good. To carry it over from Saturday was probably a mistake anyway, but I think people were willing to go along with it and be like, look, give it a chance, new manager, give him an opportunity. That's fine. To get 30 minutes into that game and we were being overrun, we were being ransacked. Like, the message I was sending you lads, which you can see anyway on the telly, was like, it's a cricket score. Do you know what I mean? It's going to be, we're going for multiples here. Like, I think I said 5, 6, or 7. It's like, you can see it already. Something has to change here. And I know he doesn't have a massive pack to shuffle on. A lot of that's not his fault, but change something. Like, you need to have more of an influence on the game. It's not enough as a manager to stand even for 45 minutes and just go, Joe, what do you expect to happen? Like, maybe it'll be okay, or we need to stick to our game plan. We were having no impact, really. I think the first 10 or 15 minutes, we had a few glimmers of chances. You know, we had the odd opportunity. I think Taylor had a decent header, maybe should have done better with. Like, there were moments for us, but that had all gone away after about 20 or 25 minutes, and it was just complete one-way traffic. So,
yeah, I wanted to ask, in the running order, I've maybe put it in a more bleak term than what it is, but I wanted to get your thoughts on the idea that maybe Tuesday night was kind of rock bottom, and that's the point where actually the penny drops and things can start to turn around. And what I meant by that was, you know, Gary Monk is still sort of new to the team, and he's also new to this level, and he's kind of feeling his way. And you could see what he was trying to do on Tuesday night. He was trying to sort of attack and cause problems for the opposition, trying to be better with the ball, like you were saying a moment ago. And perhaps he was just being a little bit too naive in how we were approaching it away from home against a very good team and a team in form. And I'm just wondering if getting that kind of result now gives him an indication of actually not what is needed over the next 9 games, but a better idea of how to get it out of those players. Don't know. Did that, any of that sort of make sense? Anything there that you think kind of there could be some benefits from having such a poor showing on Tuesday?
I hope you're right. I hope it was rock bottom. If that's rock bottom, we'll stay up because we'll do enough. We don't need to do loads to stay up, right, points wise. So yeah, hopefully you're right. Hopefully that was rock bottom. It would be a shame if it wasn't. I'd be lying if I said I wasn't really worried about Saturday, because I think if we get a negative result Saturday and then we're going to Barnsley away, Wigan at home, Blackpool away, and then a sort of resurgent Charlton at home, Bristol Rovers away on a Tuesday night, famously not great on Tuesdays. I've almost listed the rest of the games there, so I really do think Saturday is quite big. I think I follow your logic, but we need to see the words followed up with action, right? I think I see where you're coming from. Getting thundered 6-0 might actually be in the Gary Monk League One era, which hopefully will extend into next season.
Yeah.
It might be the best thing that's happened for us, because it might be, he will never have now a better opportunity, probably in the remaining games, to make fairly radical set of changes that you can get away with as a reasonably new manager. You know, you're kind of in that window of he's allowed to try new stuff. And I think he has to, like, from just a point of pride almost, you've got to make as wholesale a change as you can for Saturday. It sounds a bit like flippant, this, but it's like, even irrespective of the result, I think certain people who played on Tuesday night just categorically cannot start on Saturday.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about Saturday then, because in the presser, Monk was very confident there'll be a response. He also said, and actually I think this was post-game rather than the presser today on Thursday, but he said, you know, it's food for thought for me. I need to reassess. I like to attack, but maybe I need a different strategy away from home. So let's use that corporate word, strategy. What do you reckon that the strategy will be for Saturday? Do you think it will be a lot more reserved and less attacking?
Don't know how to unpick it all, to be honest. In terms of the presser from yesterday, in recording terms, the Thursday presser, I felt like a lot of the questions Monk got were very much teeing up this idea of, like, right, wholesale changes. Yeah, wholesale changes. And he's sort of dotted around, like, you know, well, we have got lots to think about, but I don't really want to disrupt the sort of rhythm of the team and stuff like this.
How wholesale could you go, though? Because I was thinking about this, like, if you wanted to completely change the formation, you know, swap to a 3 or 5 at the back, which, you know, I'm a fan of. But I've seen other people mention, or even, you know, I don't, less so maybe going 4-3-3, but he's not had that many sessions to train and play and master sort of new formation. So Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, I don't think that's enough really to sort of embed a new, you know, formation for the squad. So surely if the change is going to happen, it's going to be more around how we are out of possession and in possession, but keeping the same 4-2-3-1 and maybe a tweak in personnel. And I can't see him dropping loads and loads of people as much as there is the clamour for him to do so, because I'm not sure we've got the options to do it.
If you get done for six, you've got a bit of a, I'm not going to call it a free hit, you've got a bit of an opportunity to make quite radical changes. So I get what you're saying about training and not having had time to drill it in, but the changes you're making are not, they're not that alien. You're asking a set of professional footballers to play in their set position. You know, I'm not talking about some of this message board nonsense of like,
I'm coming to that at some point. Well, yeah. Cause I want to hear about your thoughts.
I know how much you loved it, of just the message board is officially starting to lose its mind as it is wanting to do in March and is suggesting all kinds of crazy.
Are you saying that Liam Bennett can't play number 10?
I was a bit surprised by, well, no, I wasn't surprised, to be clear, cause nothing ever surprised me anymore.
Give it a go. Just give it a go. Why not?
I think, look, if you're going to go 3-5-2, which is eminently possible and would be interesting, or 5-3-2, you know, one of those that flips and we have wing backs, you're not really asking many people in that 11, whoever that is, to do dramatically different jobs. You're asking a set of centre backs to be centre backs. You're asking the biggest stretch is you're probably asking some full backs to play 5 yards further up the pitch. Like, do you know what I mean? Especially if you're looking at Danny Andrew and Liam Bennett, these are two blokes who like to get up and down anyway. So I don't think you're really reinventing the wheel by saying to them, look, you are playing at wing back, not at full back. And then no one else in that setup is going to have to play a different, you know, a dramatically different role. So I sort of get where you're coming from. But I think if a set of professional footballers cannot adopt or change to a new, slightly different shape with a few different bodies in different places, then yeah, we probably will get relegated, to be honest.
I don't know if he's got the fitness to go five at the back, because, you know, they were talking in the presser about Okadina training, so maybe he could be in contention for Saturday. Rossi seemed a little bit further behind. I'm desperate to know, like, how radical would you like to see him go? Like, what lineup would you like to see him put out?
I think the more distant we get from Tuesday, the less radical I get, if that makes sense. If you'd have asked me at 10 p.m. on Tuesday, I'd have been like, it's full youth team, basically. Just get them all in, like Scales, Barton. I was just trying to name as many youth players as I could.
Get Joe back.
I think there are some interesting changes that can be made. I think the shape is obviously something we need to consider. Like, so, in a way, it's almost flip it. Start with the things that categorically can't happen. So Digby and Cousins is just a failed experiment that has been repeated by several different people now. Mm-hmm. That simply can't happen. I'll extend that and say Jordan Cousins also just can't happen after Tuesday night, to be honest. Like, if short of Adam May not getting, I think did May get dropped after Peterborough? Like, there are certain situations where it's like certain people just cannot play the next game, unfortunately. Yeah. I saw an interesting suggestion on the message board that we should not start Lyle Taylor, which I'm on board with as well. He probably has a better opportunity to come off the bench and make an impact in a game if we can hold on into it.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, mentions of press conference about Gassan and Fajiri having a chance as well. I would expect to actually probably see both of them on the bench. I think Monk/Kane, we are in that situation now where it's like, park the medical science for a minute and just get the bodies around it. Because even if they can only give you 10 minutes each, you might just need it. I think for me, it's probably is 3-5-2. It probably is wing backs. Liam Bennett right, Danny Andrew left. The fittest
not,
other
not
centre
Brophy.
Back.
Not Brophy?
Not Brophy. Danny Andrew, I would say. I've got a role for Brophy. Don't you worry about that.
I was going to say, Brophy's got the pace and...
I've still gone full message board with Brophy, because I'd be putting Brophy in centre midfield. So that's my stolen from Tom Sewell thought. Slash, it's an interesting thing because he's a great ball carrier.
He nearly scored. He nearly scored on Tuesday. Had you left by that point?
he twice nearly scored. I saw that. That provided some much needed just levity. Do you know what I mean? It just provided a bit of fun in the away end.
I'm glad he didn't score. It's going to be such a special moment when it happens, and it will happen, Matthew, that it would have been wasted if he'd scored when we were like 4-0 down, or then we go on to lose 6-1 and Perez didn't get sent off.
Anyway, I've got Danny Andrew left back. I've got Liam Bennett right back. I've got three centre backs, obviously going to be Morris and Bennett, and maybe Okadine is fit enough. We need someone. There are certain things we need that we've had at different times this season. So I think it's also same as Digby and Cousins. It's becoming clear that Morris and Bennett, as in Ryan Bennett, also doesn't work because you have to sit too low. They're just between the depth and
pace. It was a really interesting question on the pod that came out on Monday about personnel and recruitment, and the answers that you guys gave were spot on. And I was sort of thinking about it afterwards, and I was like, personnel assembled together in that sort of core spine area just doesn't work as a four. Like, if you're going to play Bennett and Morrison, and to be fair, it worked last year and it worked quite a lot this year, you know, 12 clean sheets, etc. You can't have two people in the double pivot ahead of them that are no good on the ball. It just doesn't work. So it's just like the whole grand scheme of the recruitment, like you're sort of bringing in bits that don't match with the other bits.
The thing I would agree with Morrison and Bennett as individuals, there is actually nothing wrong with it. Can't extend that to Digby and Cousins at the moment, because Cousins has been too culpable for too many things. I just want to be clear, because you get this narrative all over it. He's not a shit footballer. He hasn't suddenly become a shit footballer. There's clearly something there. The guy's made 200 plus appearances in the championship. I'm not saying it's system that is causing what's going on, because I think the lower down you go in the pyramid, the less time and space you have. I reckon in the championship he had obviously better players around him, but also much more time and space. And he's getting that kind of education in League One on a Tuesday night at Lincoln away against a team that's obviously well-drilled, and I have watched the DVDs. You will have no time whatsoever, but he needs to adapt and he needs to evolve. And to be honest, he needs to sit out on Saturday.
You can't have the nibbler playing number 10, chasing him down.
Would ransack him, honestly. And same with Morrison and Bennett, to be honest. And it's almost like there's not actually, you're right about setup. It's not necessary to do the individuals. Like, both Michael Morrison and Ryan Bennett have had great careers, and both of them have been really good for Cambridge United on the return, you know, for Morrison and Bennett. They've both played really well. As you say, lots of clean sheets. You can't overlook all of that. We need more energy just in the middle of the park. We need a centre back who's not afraid and is capable of carrying the ball all the way, like Lloyd Jones was. We miss him so much.
Hugely.
And then we need a centre midfielder who's willing to do the same. Like, I think we spoke about it a few times in the pods, but it feels like when we've got the ball across the back four at the moment, no one is really showing for the ball. No one's really like, give me the ball, I want it. Obviously, always at this point, where Zulahan's name comes up. And at this stage, not asking someone to, you know, just be like Wes is so simple. But my feeling is, with Brophy, of all the players we've got who are willing to pick up the ball and actually travel with it, he's the one that I would trust the most. He's got good feet. He's brave, like he's willing to do it. So I would have a go at it. It sounds mad, obviously, but it would be, where are we? We've got our back five sorted, 5-3-2. It'd be like, not a double pivot, but Brophy and Digby more, you know, deeper. Someone like Langster in the middle, and then probably Kachunga, and I guess if you're not starting Taylor, I guess it's going to be like Kachunga and Kaikai if he turns up on time. And I think in terms of changes, whilst we've not changed tons of personnel there, it's a pretty big change we've spoken about, right? It's not like massive team lineup changes, because we don't really have it in our locker right now, but it's a pretty significant shape and approach difference, if that makes sense. I also just think, if you're looking at Brophy in centre midfield, he's responsible. He's an intelligent footballer. Like, he will do the defensive work that he has to do. I just think if you're going to launch a breakaway and pick a ball up in your own third, James Brophy or Liam Bennett, they're the two people you kind of want the ball to be at the feet of, who are going to get you 40 or 50 yards up the pitch. it makes whoever's playing behind the front two so important, because they have to do the sort of almost the Wes like show for the ball, want the ball. Lancaster has been looking decent last few weeks in a very difficult team.
Mm-hmm.
So it's got to be him, I think, show, you know, doing that job, that really important job of linking with the midfield and trying to create chances for strikers, basically. What do you think?
Oh, I mean, you know, I love three at the back, so I'd love to see it. That midfield of Brophy and Lancaster seems a bit light to me. I personally think the change won't be that radical. I think he'll stick with the 4-2-3-1, but maybe with, you know, less of
Starts Cousins and Digby together, I'm going to walk out the away end. I'm going to get in a cab. I'm going to go Sports Direct. I'm going to buy 500 tennis balls and a Reading FC shirt. I'm going to get a cab back to the ground, get in the home end, and I'm going to start lobbing tennis balls on the pitch, and then I'm going to run on the pitch. You're gonna have my word on that.
I think he'll stick to the four. I mean, I want to see that. I do want to see that.
Everyone wants to see that.
I think he'll stick to the 4-2-3-1, and I think the central. I think it will be more of a sort of a 4-3-3 when sort of attacking and 4-5-1 out of possession. I think the 10 role will be sat a little bit deeper. And yeah, I think one of Cousins and Digby gets dropped. I'd like it to be Cousins. I do think Lancaster will be asked to sit a little bit deeper and help sort of play and show for the ball. But who else would go in there? Maybe an Adam May. Maybe wants to see what Adam May is like. All depends on how he's training. And yeah, potentially maybe swap out one of Morrison or Bennett. Probably Bennett if Okadina is fit and ready to go. Just because, like you say, we are missing that. Someone that's willing to sort of bring the ball out and not just pass it short for someone to like a central midfielder to drop deep and collect with their back to the rest of the game. Go on then. Score prediction. It's a huge one. Do you think we're going to get anything from it?
I think there's like a 30-40% chance the game doesn't end.
I was going to ask that next, yeah.
So through protests. If I was the Reading fan base, which obviously I will be, as we've established, if Cousins starts. So
with your tennis balls, yeah.
With my tennis balls, I can speak on behalf of this, my newly adopted club. Surely you arrange a protest, but if you go 1-0 up, you just go, no protest today, and you bank the points. But then if you're 1-0 down, you're like, game on. Anyway, that's my protest strategy. If I'm a Reading fan, you know, which might happen, who knows? Score prediction. God, I hadn't even thought of this, even though it was bound to come up. I struggle after Tuesday night to see us keeping a clean sheet, if I'm totally honest.
Agreed. And there's a small matter of a certain striker who's realised there's a transfer window coming up and is what, 4-4, 5-5 going into this game?
He does tend to run hot at this time of year, yeah.
Might have a bit of a reputation for cupping his ear or shushing fans. Probably would love to score.
He'll be shushing directly at Tom Walker yet again. If Walker's, you know, in the stand and not in the concourse, so he needs to score at a very specific time in the game, I would suggest. Score prediction. God, I haven't even, you know what, even though it's Thursday night, I think this is what the Tuesday Saturday does when it's such a damaging Tuesday night. Really closed my brain to Cambridge United. I think we got a response. We have to score. So we have to set up more. Like Monk must find a way to get us to score. But I think we lose like 3-1, if I'm honest.
Oh, that's bad. That is bad.
I know. I can't see. I just can't see it at the moment. We could literally be playing the dog and duck under 11s, and I think I'd still feel not great.
I think the most positive score prediction I could go for is 1-1, but I think we'll lose 2-1, I think, if it even happens. Which probably is a good segue into talking very briefly about the plight of Reading and how things have, well, they were bad at the start of the season. They looked a little bit better when we played them last and have gone incredibly worse since. We've purposely saved the fan preview to the end of the pod. It's an extended one this week. As you would imagine, we wanted to get as much information and understanding of the Reading situation, and we've got that via Matt, who's joined us. That fan preview, by the way, Matt, was recorded on Wednesday, and we are recording on Thursday. And the news today is that, you know, Reading are planning to sell their state of the art.
I think it's done.
Has it been done?
I think it's basically done. So
their state of the art training facilities at a fraction of the cost to one of their geographical rivals in Wickham. So yeah, from an outsider's perspective, what's your take on Reading and everything that's going on there?
Well, firstly, not to take the piss, but ever since we've opened our brand new state-of-the-art training ground, it's all gone to shit. So do you think we should sell ours?
Well, I did wonder, should we like try and go for theirs? Because ours is a bit cursed. Already taken two managers out, but yeah.
It has. I know. What's wrong with our training ground? Anyway, like, you know, less about us. Yeah, I mean, it's fair to point out, obviously, that there's fairly big recent news. The preview, obviously, I mean, people are listening to the pod now, so they're probably going to listen to the preview anyway, but it's a really good listen, like, from Matt at Elm Park Rolls, like, really well balanced. The depth of his passion on behalf of Reading and their passion is really clear. It's just an extremely, like, sad situation. I don't understand how, with all this focus on football governance and fit and proper persons tests, we can be in this situation, that any club can be in this situation, where someone who has already got incredibly poor history with two other football clubs globally, who's put two clubs into liquidation already, Reading's owner, is then able to pick up another club, particularly in one where, you know, this is the most esteemed football pyramid in the world is English Football League. So I just don't understand how that's come to pass. Bit of a cliche, I guess, but it's like, whilst the football is very important on Saturday, it's worth bearing in mind there's much more serious stuff going on for Reading. They've got £1 million bill for payroll that they have to settle in March, otherwise they've got like points deductions brewing. It's a bit macabre to say from a Cambridge United perspective, obviously those point deductions aren't necessarily the worst thing, but that's an incredibly self-centered viewpoint from a Cambridge United perspective. So don't want to see other clubs in this situation. From a Cambridge viewpoint, we should just be staying up on our merits and not worrying about other teams getting deductions and stuff like that. The other thing that's coming is in April, they also have to also make payroll, which is like another £1 million outlay for them. So the situation for them is very bleak. As Matt says in the preview, if they don't make their April responsibilities from a payment perspective, the season will have ended. And they still have the risk after the season ends of losing more points. So, again, putting my Cambridge hat on, that could put us in a very weird situation where we get relegated and then we get reprieved, which none of it sounds like fun for us, but certainly not for them. So, obviously, Matt in the preview with Jules plugs the Die Young, the cause, so you can follow the Twitter and get more information about what's going on there. But it's a really fascinating listen. Obviously, hopefully Reading come out of it with a club still intact at the end of it is obviously a really important thing. So fingers crossed for them.
Absolutely. I think listeners to this pod of a certain age will remember our plight, the Bridge the Gap, nearly going out of business, and understanding all those horrible, horrible feelings that we faced. So yeah, hopefully things pan out for Reading. Like you say, very odd feelings, thinking about the fact that actually if they were to get another 2 or 3 point deduction, it could help us, you know, don't want to stay up that way, but you just never know.
You know what? It just shouldn't come to that from our perspective. If it does come down to that, obviously we'd be grateful for the reprieve in a sort of really somber way, but it's a properly hollow thing, right? Do you know what I mean? Like, obviously it will feel good because at the end of the day, we just want to maintain League One status. But really, if we're coming down to other clubs and that needing more points deductions, but it's worth bearing in mind they've already been deducted points for this, that and the other, the impact of what's happening with Reading needs to go completely back through to the authorities, because this situation simply shouldn't be allowed to occur. It's the most grisly thought, obviously, that we all had to deal with sort of 22, 23 years ago. The very real risk of losing your football club entirely, that is for many people, is in a massive part of their life, including, you know, you and me, George. Like, I don't know what we would do without Cambridge United. It's very easy to say, oh, Phoenix Club, and we'll, you know, we'll go in the Eastern Counties League or whatever. But I just don't know how real that is. You know, through Cambridge United, I've personally made tons of great friendships and going to each other's stag do's, yours coming up, mate. Weddings. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's so much more than football for many people. It's the absolute, it's sort of a key pillar of life is the football club. So it's just a totally dreadful thing to think about. So from our perspective, we need to sort our shit out and not rely on Reading being in dire straits. It's also just an incredibly grim thing to, no one is willing it on them. Do you know what I mean? But it's a terrible thing to think that we might need that kind of thing. So my message to Cambridge United is sort your shit out, so we don't need to rely on Reading. And then the message to the authorities is also sort your shit out, because shouldn't be in this situation where football clubs can fall into the hands of ownership like this, because it's completely, it's just so distant from the stuff that they're saying, if you know what I mean. Like, how can that come to pass, that the narrative is we've got all these checks on people and then people like this are able to buy football clubs? It blows my mind, to be honest.
Absolutely perfect words there, mate. I think that's a good place for us to stop and hand over to Julian, who spoke with Matt from the Elm Park Royals. But thank you for listening. We will be back on Monday morning with our review of the Reading game. Hopefully a game that's played in its entirety, and hopefully 3 points for the U's. Thank you very much for listening. We'll see you soon.
Right, U's fans, delighted to be joined by Matt from the Elm Park Royals, and also Sell Before We Die, which is probably the best place to start here, Matt. These previews, normally we run through, you know, your standard things like how's the manager getting on, how are the players, but at Reading, the story's a bit bigger than that, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah, it's been quite a year. I think when we last spoke, back in the lovely days of September, when things seemed a bit simpler, we thought something might be happening relatively soon. You know, the owner, he was apparently wanting to sell, and it's just gone catastrophically downhill since. I think that, like, it was already bad with him. You know, I think we went into the history of kind of the ownership saga at Reading when we last spoke, so I won't kind of go into the details of that, because we'll be here till Christmas. But since, yeah, multiple takeover bids have got on the verge of exclusivity, and then the owner changes things, details, payments that need to be made, the price changes. He's just made it unbelievably hard for people to work with or to try and buy the club. Seemingly he wants to screw over whoever is buying it for as much as possible, and business people don't work like that. I don't know what business he's done before in his other life where this works, but that just doesn't swim. You know, people walk away, and sadly that's what's happened multiple times. We had the potential Geneva takeover bid in November that was then scuppered. The club blaming people, pointing fingers. You know, you had certain kind of interest from the likes of Mike Ashley and that as well, that was then scuppered. And alongside that, he now just obviously doesn't want to fund the club. You had January that came up where openly kind of started asset stripping the team. There's no other way to put it. The CEO and Mr. Dye going behind Sellers' back, and the sporting director, Mark Bowen's back, to sell players, offering them up to basically any club that would want them. There was news of pretty much almost every player in the club being offered to clubs. If you want to buy them, how much kind of, and we'll allow it. Obviously led to Tom McIntyre leaving for all of 75 grand. I think it was, might have not even been that, to Portsmouth. You know, one of the players that's kind of been with us longest, Nelson Abbey, leaving for Olympiacos, who's 20, 21 years old, had fantastic first half of the season for 500K. Maybe not too bad, as in money wise, but with the potential he had, you might have thought you might be able to squeeze out a little bit more. And obviously Tom Holmes as well kind of went to Luton as well. You know, he was offered up and I think we got about the same for him. And that's all being used to fund the club, which money is now seemingly run out as kind of, I think everyone knew was going to happen this month. Takeovers are no sooner to be seen, seemingly. And, you know, we've got looming points deductions over our head. We've got another suspended two points for if any wage payment is missed, HMRC payment, footballing payment to another football club for, not that we could pay loan fees, but any loan wage payment, essentially, that's the only thing we would have that could trigger that. If any of that's missed, 2 points comes off. And then obviously any further sanctions that happen past that. And I think there's a real fear, obviously, within the fan base of liquidation. The main reason behind that being that to trigger administration, the owner needs to put you in that. To trigger like a sale of the club, the owner needs to do that. And the owner doesn't seem to want to do that. And that's the problem. You've still got this utter parasite within the club that is seemingly blocking everything, changing things at the last minute. I mean, earlier this week, you know, they even put out a statement saying that the training ground is now for sale. Well, we all kind of knew the training ground was for sale. We knew everything was for sale because you've been doing that for the last few months. But now you've come out and admitted in a public forum, in a statement, that you're willing to now sell the training ground and strip the assets of the club. Pretty much if you buy Reading FC, you're buying the training ground and supposedly the stadium, which is in Mr. Dye's name currently, but he's saying that he wants to get rid of it all. But now you're saying the training ground is available on its own. It's just, I struggle to believe how two people so incompetent and useless seemingly have got themselves into such a stature in the world where they've got that money to throw about and in those positions, because they've got to be two of the most clueless, brainless idiots, really, to not use any French or bad language. it's just been disastrous. And it's just been like, I remember when I spoke with you last, the last 6 years has been death by 1,000 cuts, where it's been, you could times that tenfold for this season, just with the amount of false hope that you've had when takeover bids have come to fruition and kind of been close to the likes of exclusivity. But ultimately we've not been that close, I guess, to a sale really, because we've never got to exclusivity this year yet. So we need to get to that hurdle. There's a fresh party, apparently it was reported the other day, an American and a Saudi consortium coming in. That obviously has its question marks on currently, but I think Reading FC fans, I mean, I would just take anyone at this point, because I know we've discussed off air the fears of not being in business at the end of the season, let alone next season, I think is very, very real, because we're needing to fund £1 million this month just to pay payroll, because there's no money there. You know, there's a reported shortfall of £1 million that needs to be paid by the end of this month.
So that's the latest thing, right? I mean, obviously there's a million things there. It's such a hard
thing. I've tried to sum it up as best as possible. Quickly as possible for you.
you could sit here for an hour, I'm sure, and you'd only get sort of halfway through some of those things you'd mention there. And I think people listening, it is obviously, it's worth going and reading up a bit on the sort of the like minutiae of the situation, because it is like, it's unfortunately it's not unique enough, right? It's frustrating how many times these situations seem to happen. But to sort of speak in the present day, what's the absolute latest piece of news that came out is the £1 million shortfall you're referring to, right? Which at the moment, what is it, 6 points you've had deducted at, so far?
6 points so far this season. Yeah, we've got the extra two suspended, which, I mean, if we don't match that shortfall, those 2 points come off. I think every Reading fan is kind of acting on the fact that, you know, we're 8 points down. We're on 37 points. We're below you guys. You know, we're in 20th position. I think every Reading FC fan knows that, because those 2 points will come off at some point. If they don't, it's a minor bloody miracle, to be honest. You know, with the protest group, with Sell Before We Die, we've tried to set up initiatives where we're doing fundraising routes, but we're trying to work with the club as well around certain elements. But it's difficult. It's difficult to get this in place. We're doing ticket donations at the moment to try and fund money where we can, because that's the best way of getting revenue into the club right now, ticket sales. Because our merchandise is owned by Fanatics, so we only get a small cut of that. Tickets is the best way, because 100% of that goes into the club. There is the worry that the owner just takes that and pockets it, but there's no other way that we can put money into the club and get that money there. So that's kind of, I guess, the latest route that we're trying to explore. We're exploring other routes as well, kind of as we go, and trying to decipher what the best route is. But yeah, ultimately there's £1 million shortfall reported that we need to try and fund somewhere before payroll comes up at the end of this month. And obviously we've got HMRC to sort out in the middle of that as well. So potentially it might not be the end of the month when 2 points get taken off. It might be HMRC when it comes up. Ultimately, 2 points will be taken off at some point. You're not getting very good odds on that not happening, I don't think.
and on a practical level, is that at this stage that you know of as many points as will be deducted this season? Because I imagine I saw a statement that you guys put out of sale before we died that there is there's obviously the 3 point suspended deduction for postponing games, but mm-hmm. as you said in your statement, staying in League One is actually still the most imperative, is such an important thing still for prospective owners buyers.
Yeah, because I think ultimately, Reading FC has quite a lot of overheads at the moment. A lot of that's because of the training ground that was obviously developed. That's got a lot of overheads to it. We've got a Category 1 academy, which, as good as it is quite unfeasible to run in League One. There's reported figures of around, it costs about £6 million every year to run, which you just can't do at this level unless, you're a Sunderland or someone with, 30 plus thousand gate revenue or gate tickets sold every week. Reading aren't in that bracket. We're having 11,000-12,000 a week. So if you get relegated from League One to League Two, it goes without saying that obviously that hole then becomes even bigger that's needing to be plugged. I think any owner that's coming in will have to do a serious reshuffling of kind of finances and where money's spent. And if that happened, if we go to League Two, you could probably just blow that out of the water. I'm not sure any prospective buyer would want to come in and buy Reading FC in League Two, which is the sad reality of it. Certainly not in its current state anyway. League One survival is just, it cannot be overstated kind of how big of a moment it is, obviously for Reading FC's history, really. It seems like we've said this almost weekly in the last 2-3 years now for Reading FC. This is almost, the most important part of our history. But it really feels like the club's at an end game situation right now, frankly, both financially and also league position wise. Because obviously if we get relegated, or if we're in threat of relegation, is any owner going to come in? Most likely not. Then you've got the situation of liquidation, there, because Is Dion going to sell the club? Very unlikely. Is he going to put it into administration? Seemingly doesn't like doing that, looking at his other two clubs that he's liquidated. The track record isn't brilliant. So we've got those point deductions waiting. But I mean, if you miss the payments, another set of payments, we'll get those 2 points taken off and they'll probably be more suspended. So which, could then, if we don't meet April's payroll, the season's finished. But you've got a suspended point deduction, which could be activated. So there's still lots of tangibles. So it's likely we could have those 2 points taken off, and then there's, potential more point deductions sitting there. Because even though the EFL have said that they're on our side, they don't like the owner. They didn't want to do more sporting sanctions on Reading FC. I think they showed their full colours when they then decided to try and push for 4 points when we got our last 2 points taken off us. They've outdone themselves again, our lovely friends at the EFL, I think it's fair to say.
It's just always such a shame in these situations, isn't it? Because the people who really suffer are the fans who have had nothing to do with any single part of this decision-making process and who feel it more than anyone. And I'm sure there's plenty of people listening that feel your plight. I mean, we were a club that were an hour from going out of administration in 2005 ourselves. So there's plenty of people who remember that. Do you want to just give us a little plug to where people can go to if they want to donate any money or help you out in any way?
Yeah, so keep up to date with the Sell Before We Die Twitter at Sell Before We Die, abbreviated SWBD. Our social channels as well on EPR. We're helping obviously out a lot with the socials on that. Tile East End, likewise, Supporters Trust at Reading as well. Club 1871 as well. We're the main fan groups within Reading FC, and we're the ones that are trying to publicise this as much as possible. So go give the main Sell Before We Die Twitter a follow to keep up to date with that, and then obviously all the relevant Reading social Twitters for the fan groups.
We'll share a link out with the show as well, so definitely do consider donating to give them a hand. There's going to be a game of football at the end of Saturday.
I'm going to need a therapy session after this, I think.
Football. Honestly, we'll be willing to donate 3 points to you on Saturday, I think, judging by the way we're playing at the moment.
Don't say that.
And it seems like Ruben Sellers has put together like an okay side. Like I know without points deductions, you'd be sitting a pretty handy mid-table 15th, given everything seems like there is a bit of a team there.
Yeah, I think, you know, and the start of the season was, well, it was crazy, to be honest. The amount of, well, some people say bad luck, that there was a lot of individual errors within the team. Some moments, goalkeeping moments from the likes of David Button, which, you know, handed results to other teams. But the amount of losses we were getting and points that we were losing in the 85th plus minute was astonishing. I think, you know, I think we've only claimed, I think it's 2 points from in the 85th plus minute, and we've lost something like it's about 15 or 16 points or something in the last 5 minutes. Even when we came to you guys, you know, we conceded in the 83rd minute, and you know what was probably going to be a solid away performance at, you know, a team that was pushing top six at the time, then turned into a loss. And that was really the story of the early season. Combine that though with the lack of pre-season that we had. Sellers, to be fair, before the season said that, look, we've had no pre-season. We're going to have to, we will probably improve in the second half of the season. Whether that was to buy himself time, I don't know, but it seems to have come true. But I think some of the returning players that have come back for us, you know, Lewis Wing was injured early doors, took a bit of time to settle seemingly, but has come massively into the frame now at Reading. Player you guys are probably well aware of, Sam Smith as well, was injured for the first couple of months of the season, has now come back into the side and is on, I think he's 10 goals in 24 games. You know, real, real good striker. And the team changed really once he came back into it, the way we pressed, the way he led the line.
I see he's scored 4 and 4 at the moment, hasn't he?
Yes.
Just in time for Saturday, so that's perfect.
Yeah, he, as you probably remember, he likes to go on streaks at the start and end of seasons. And he did that for his season this year as well, seemingly, even though his season started late. He started well, had a very quiet run over New Year and January and February. But yeah, he's back firing, which is good to see. He was getting very unlucky, I think, in some of the games. You could probably argue he should have at least 3 or 4 more goals than he did. He's had one-on-ones that have been cleared off the line incredibly, own goals that have been scored because of his positioning, which you think, well, if that's not an own goal, he's tapping it in, you know, so he's been a real, real presence, you know, and seeing his development as a player from when he left Reading FC to what he is now is just chalk and cheese. You know, I guess, you know, as a young player, right, when he was coming through us, he was 18, 19, 20 years old, but the change in his game, the intelligence of it, it's so much, so different. He could probably work on holding up the ball a bit better, but he's a striker at the end of the day. You want a striker to score goals. And, you know, he does that, you know, on a regular occurrence, seemingly. But yeah, you know, I think this Reading team has really shown since we lost to Shrewsbury. That game, we were 2-1 up going into the 92nd minute, and then we lost 3-2 somehow to a team that is one of the worst teams I think I've seen this season. On both occasions we played them, and both times we lost 3-2. I'm not trying to sound too bitter about it, but they weren't very good. Since that first game that we played against them, that's when everything has changed around, you know. And I think if you look at the form table since then, you know, we're pushing top six, and kind of, I guess, you know, well, I don't think many Reading fans would have thought we would have been there kind of pushing top six after the summer. But you can start to see a real kind of foundation of a team there that's really good. And we've shown beating, you know, the likes of Derby at home, beating Bolton this season, you know, we can do it against some really good teams. Stevenage as well away, this team can pull results out, and it's nice to see, because the team seemingly really bought into it as well. Yeah, so long may it continue, really.
Yeah, definitely. How about another guy from our own parish, Harvey Nibbs? Has he been getting on?
As you could probably imagine, has become a real fan favourite, probably the fan favourite, I'd almost say. I mean, that what can't you say about the guy? I mean, this season for him, I think, has been his most productive of his career. I think he's on 15 goals in all competitions so far. He's got 9 in the league. He's seemingly really flourished. We were playing him out wide to begin with, which I think was where he was playing when he was with you, out on the left. But Selez has kind of moved him a bit more centrally, playing a bit more in kind of a midfield role or attacking midfielder role, kind of linking up with Sam Smith in that respect. And since doing that, he's just flourished. You know, he's coming up scoring good goals, affecting games, arguably could have scored a lot more as well. He's finishing sometimes a bit hit or miss, but when he scored 9 goals, you know, you can't be complaining at that from a midfielder, really. And the one thing is, you guys know, that he never stops doing is running. You know, I've not seen an engine like he's had for some time. He reminds me of, you know, like a James Harper or someone, you know, back from our 106 days. That he's like a Duracell bunny on steroids, you know, and will always play 90 minutes. He didn't actually against Derby, which is, I think, one of the first times he'd been subbed off this year. But yeah, you know, what can't you say about him? It's nice to see a player like that flourish, and he's seemingly enjoying his time at Reading, and yeah, you know, again, long may it continue.
Yeah, brilliant. Good for him, I guess. Hopefully he doesn't relegate us on Saturday, which would be some turn of events. How do you normally set up then? Was it a 4-2-3-1?
Yes. Yeah. Well, so obviously earlier in the season, Selez was playing that 4-2-2-2 as well. Almost the system that was attributed to, was it Ralf Rangnick, you know, back in his Leipzig days, that Gegenpress type of formation. That was just a disaster though. You know, that changed pretty much at that, after that Shrewsbury game. We changed to a 4-1-4-1 after that Shrewsbury game. And that's kind of developed into almost a 4-1-4-1 / 4-2-3-1. Really, you'll often see Nibs playing much more advanced, like I say, almost playing as a 10 behind Smith. But then in defence, we play a very flat kind of midfield with a sitting midfielder, usually Savage or Craig, in behind them. And it's created really solid base. We like getting it wide. Femi Aziz, obviously, this season has been fantastic. Been a bit quieter of late, but we like to utilise those kind of crossfield channels in behind the fullbacks quite a bit. It's quite a fast, relatively direct style, I'd say. It's not like a, you know, a Steve Evans direct, you know, just lumping it long. But often they like a ball in behind. Sam Smith as well, very good on the shoulder as well. He likes obviously chasing a ball in behind. So that's often what happens. But playing it down the wings with the fullbacks coming up is how Reading like to play, which might change this weekend. I don't know, because Andy Yeardham, our captain, got sent off last night in true EFL fashion, in quite farcical circumstances, really. Two yellow cards that weren't even yellow cards in the second, which was actually a blatant dive, got him sent off, which isn't brilliant. So he'll be missing the weekend game and also our next game against Northampton because it's his second red card, and you can't appeal yellow or two yellows that lead to a red, seemingly. So he'll be missing, and he's been crucial down that right hand side with his link up with Femi Azeez. So it'll be interesting to see how that side shapes up. I could imagine Mola will play right back, Clinton Mola, with left back being Jarrell Dorsett. But yeah, they still like to play high, those two, in Mola and Dorsett. But yeah, it's just frustrating not to have captain and kind of one of the best players this season, and Andy Idem, driving it.
Yeah, well, music to my ears, I guess. What's your prediction for the game then?
Oh, I think both of us are probably going into this thinking it's a must win, from both teams' standpoint. I think, you know, I think it's going to be crucial for both of our survival hopes. You know, it could mean quite a frenetic game. You've always got that uncertainty with a new manager, with Gary Monk, I think with you guys. And also for me, it has shades of Port Vale earlier in the season, when Port Vale got beaten 7-0 on the first day of the season. And then we played them and they beat us 1-0. You guys lost 6-0 last night. I hope it's not a repeat of that Port Vale situation, but yeah, it could go anyway. I think I'd like to think that we can pick up a win and get back on track after Derby last night, because we played well against Derby. There were just ulterior factors that kind of decided that game, sadly. I'm gonna go 3-1 to Reading. I'm gonna stick my head out on the line. I never normally predict wins on previews, so I am very much tempting fate here. But yeah, I'm gonna go 3-1.
Okay.
And touching all the wood I can.
Well, obviously, I hope you're wrong. Matt, thank you so much for giving us a bit of an update on everything. Obviously,
pleasure.
I hope in this sort of more like existential, bigger way that everything goes well for the end of the season. But I do hope we finish above you, whichever side of this.
Hopefully we can finish like 16th and 17th or something. You 17th, yeah. you 16th and us 17th. Then we're all happy.
Then we'll all be happy. That would be great. Look, brilliant. Thanks very much, Matt.
Lovely. Thank you.